Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Cuffing season for me, firing season for NFL teams. This is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty and Amber Wilson, who's filling in for Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. We've been having a conversation all show long on what is the best NFL head coaching job available. We want you to chime in on the Dr. Pepper call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. And Amber, the Miami Dolphins, the Minnesota Vikings, the Chicago Bears, and the Denver Broncos fire their head coaches. That's four firings that happened in the last 24 hours. And on top of that, we had the in-season firings in Jacksonville and Las Vegas, leading to six total vacancies for head coaching spots in the National Football League. And I got to ask you the question, what do you think is the best job among the six?
I think you could probably argue the Raiders is the best of the jobs because, hey, they're the playoff team, right? So that's sort of like the easy baseline to start with. Which of these teams is in the playoffs? And it's the Las Vegas Raiders. I think on top of that, I've been really impressed with what Derek Carr has been able to do this season. I think Carr is one of the more underappreciated quarterbacks in the National Football League. And his veteran presence has really gotten that team through a really, really tumultuous, difficult season, obviously, with the firing of John Gruden and everything else that has gone on there with that Vegas team. And then credit to Vegas in terms of as a market. I mean, they were on fire against the Chargers at Allegiant Stadium. And I was really impressed by that environment as well. So I feel like if you were a head coach and you're looking at the landscape, now I don't know if that job is going to be available because maybe the interim coach becomes the head coach there. But if we're rocking with that job, like as if it's available, I do think that there is a draw for the team that's actually already in the playoffs and being able to build on top of that. I also think that the Dolphins is a surprising job. I don't know how much it hurts the Dolphins that everyone is so surprised. I think the knock on this move could be the reaction to the Brian Flores firing and the fact that people are kind of so surprised and so up in arms about it. And now are they going to be considered dysfunctional because of that from moving on from Flores? But absent that portion of the conversation, you are talking about a Dolphins team that had back-to-back winning seasons. A Dolphins team, I think with 9 wins, you could argue underperformed this season because they had 10 wins last season when they had a rookie quarterback under center and they were toggling him with a journeyman type vet. And then this season winning 9 games, it's still not enough to get them into the playoffs, but they're right there. Like both seasons, they've been in that must win situation where they could have made the playoffs had they played better. So there is pieces to capitalize on there. That one comes down to Tua though, Chris, which all these head coaching vacancies, let's be real. Like the evaluation is going to come down to, do you believe in Tua? Do you believe in Justin Fields? Do you believe in Kirk Cousins? Like that's the conversation we're going to have with all of these.
But I think also a caveat to this conversation is, do you believe in the guy that's buying the groceries for you as the head coach to cook with? Because you mentioned it, Las Vegas being an attractive job because they're a playoff team. But that also means you have to work with Mike Mayock, who has had his share of misses when it comes to high draft picks. Damon Arnett, Henry Ruggs. I mean, even criticism of Alex Leatherwood. At least you can say the offensive lineman that was a first-round pick is still with the team. And then in Miami, Chris Greer. I mean, during his tenure, he's presided over 6 drafts. He's had 9 first-round draft picks and not one Pro Bowl player in the first-round draft pick that's still with the team. And so I know you're optimistic about a lot of the picks that came out of this year's draft, and there's good reason for that. But I think the overarching question when it comes to your belief in the attractiveness of the job is whether or not you think you can have a good working relationship with Chris Greer. And for a head coach in Brian Flores, that seems like he knows what he's doing, for that relationship to go left to the point where they moved on and fired him, I think that's got to be a little bit of one of those things that raises an eyebrow if you're a prospective head coaching candidate for that gig. But I'm with you. I think the Raiders is probably the most attractive job. And I would say that the Denver Broncos is probably an attractive job too, because that franchise is just a quarterback away. Now, I get it. It's a really tough division. They are just a quarterback away. I mean, you do have a top 10 defense. You have a lot of weapons at the skill positions players on that team. The offensive line has been solid. It's been stabilized. It feels like that team is just a quarterback away. And when Teddy Bridgewater got hurt, their season kind of went left as well. So I think that's the situation that I'm looking at. I would probably put the Denver Broncos right there. The NFC North, I think both of those jobs, I don't know about how attractive they are just because of the position that they're in. Justin Fields, whether or not you believe in him, I think is going to go a long ways to whether or not it's attractive there. And then, of course, with the Minnesota Vikings, Kirk Cousins is the quarterback there. We've seen that Kirk Cousins is just good enough to get you fired. So I think there are serious question marks with those teams, and they seem like they've hitched their wagons to those two quarterbacks. They're not moving off of those guys. So to me, those would be the most attractive jobs. I would say the Las Vegas Raiders. I would say the Denver Broncos. And then I would probably put right there the Miami Dolphins.
Man, you're putting the Broncos ahead of the Dolphins. Woof. I mean, poor Drew Locke, right? I mean, he did everything he could against that Chiefs team, and then Fangio took a flamethrower to him in the post, and now we're essentially doing that here. But yes, they don't have a quarterback under center, certainly not a viable one moving forward for Denver, and they do have something like $47 million in potential cap space. To that point, though, the Dolphins, I think, have more cap space than any other team in the NFL. So they have all the cap space you could ever want. They have multiple first-round draft kit picks coming up here in 2023, which I think they had set themselves up in that manner in order to address the Tua situation if, in fact, they decide after next season that they need to move on from Tua. And that's, of course, not considering the whole Deshaun Watson conversation that never seems to go away. We'll see if it goes away now that Flores has gone away in terms of that franchise. But I do think that, you know, there are going to be coaching candidates out there that look at like a Justin Fields and a Chicago market and think, yes, Fields has it. He's got the talent. He's got the goods. I want to go somewhere that does in fact have that quarterback of the future in place. I'm not saying that that's my opinion. I have no idea if Justin Fields is going to work out in the NFL. I'm just saying that I do think that you could argue, since we're going through all these vacancies, the attractiveness of already having the quarterback of the future who you know you're going to be working with. So if in fact you do believe in that talent that's there, maybe that's more of a draw than say like a Broncos team, you know, that isn't in a position right now where you know who's going to be the quarterback of the future. And we're talking about, of course, a weak draft class as well, although again, that is a team that has some draft space. The Kirk Cousins situation with the Vikings, I mean, you mentioned it, right? Like in a way, it's like, okay, you have a vet under center who can win games. And then another way, the huge knock on that job is, well, you have a vet under center who can only win some games. You know, I mean, that's it's like the good and the bad with that Vikings job and what you're walking into there in Minnesota. And then we haven't even mentioned the Jaguars job. Obviously, that's available as well. And if you really believed in Trevor Lawrence, that's a market without much pressure to it, especially coming off of what a disastrous tenure Urban Meyer had. So there are certainly some jobs here. All of these are going to be attractive jobs. I do, for me, I'm a bit skewed, but I do think it's probably between the Dolphins and the Raiders in terms of the most attractive.
Amber, I'm listening to you talk about the Chicago situation, and I think that you're starting to sway me just a little bit, because when you look at that division, clearly it's dominated by the Green Bay Packers, but the question about Aaron Rodgers' future is going to determine the outlook and who's going to have that status as the best team in that division. And Justin Fields, I think he's got a chance to be the future at quarterback in that division, more so than I've seen from Jordan Love or anything that I've seen from the Detroit Lions with Jared Goff. So I actually think that there is the potential for Justin Fields. The only thing that concerns me is the Chicago Bears as an organization haven't shown the ability to be able to develop a franchise quarterback, and you've got to put a lot of faith in their new general manager to find the right coach to develop Justin Fields. So I think that would be the one piece that I would say I could be swayed into saying Chicago should be in the mix for, you know, a top two or three job this hiring cycle. But I'm with you. I think the Las Vegas Raiders have to be considered the best job that is available. And there's even a question of whether or not it should be available based on the job that Rich Bisaccia has done for them this season, guiding them through all of the drama that has happened with that franchise. But coming up next, was retaining Joe Judge the right move for the New York Giants? We'll get into that. This is Chris Canty and Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Reaction Monday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty here with Amber Wilson, who's filling in for Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Insurance is proud to support veterans with its annual Keys to Progress vehicle giveaway program, now celebrating 9 years of donating vehicles, helping veterans in need. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. NewYorkGiants.com. And Amber, one of the keys to the New York Giants' progress has to be moving forward, finding the right general manager. We got the news today officially that Dave Gettleman, the Giants' general manager since the end of the 2017 season, is retiring. He's stepping down, and the official search is on for the next general manager. And it seems like the Giants are content moving forward with their head coach, Joe Judge. But I got to tell you, Amber, as a former player, just reading the tea leaves and hearing the sentiment from a lot of Giants fans out there, they are not excited about Joe Judge continuing to be the head coach. And after the optics from the quarterback sneak on 3rd and 9 in the second quarter from your own 5-yard line, I can't blame Giants fans for being up in arms about it. Here's Joe Judge in the post-game press conference about the QB sneak.
So we're backed up. We had a shot on the play action to get the ball out in the flat. Okay, we got to make the throw and hit the guy right there. Eli was open there. Would have been a good shot coming off the goal line there to get us some yardage and get some space. And then ultimately, look, we're backed up. I want to get room. We're going to push it on forward. I wasn't going to live through what happened last week in Chicago. So we're going to give ourselves room for the punt. We did that. We gave ourselves room for the punt. We protected it. We covered well. We played the field position situation I want to play. We held them on the next drive. And that's the way we want to go ahead and play that. Now, do we want to do that all the time we're backed up? No, but that was the situation of the day with where we were. And I want to make sure that, the things that we had issues with last week in Chicago, that was not going to repeat itself.
Amber, here's what I don't understand. He's talking about giving them room to be able to punt the football. You know, a quarterback sneak, that quarterback sneak that they called only went for 1 yard.
Right.
I don't understand the logic in saying that, well, we needed to give ourselves room, so we're going to go with this QB sneak as a big gainer so we can have room for our punter to kick it away. Just doesn't make sense to me at all. And from the optics of it, it felt like a give-up situation for the New York Giants offense. And for the life of me, I can't understand. You had a week to practice with Jake Fromm, knowing that he was going to be your starting quarterback, and yet in that game, it was evident that you didn't trust him to throw the football. Now, I think with the pick six, that's for a good reason, but still, you couldn't come up with a better game plan for Jake Fromm as your starting quarterback. Then you're going to go with a quarterback sneak in the second quarter when you're down by 3 points from your own 5-yard line on 3rd and 9. Makes no sense to me.
It makes absolutely no sense. I guess the counter argument to it would be that you weren't supposed to have Fromm as your quarterback, and it's hard to evaluate coaches when their guys aren't out there. I guess that would be the counterpoint. And what does it look like if you're running back Daniel Jones next season and maintaining Joe Judge? A few weeks ago when we were having this conversation on air, Chris, I kept saying that I thought that the Giants were going to keep Judge at the helm because in large part it appeared that they were going to ride with Daniel Jones for now. And I felt like those two guys were kind of linked. And I understand the philosophy that just a couple years isn't necessarily enough to turn something around. If you believed in him when you made that hire a couple years ago, then what has changed where you all of a sudden don't believe in him now when you've had a difficult season with your quarterback and the injury to Jones and you shut him down early? If you're bringing Daniel Jones back, is it going to be beneficial to a young quarterback to have to change staffs? And I think that the answer to that is normally always no. So if you're trying to maintain some semblance of consistency because you're an organization that has had a carousel of coaches and you are also concerned about that reputation, so you want to maintain some sort of semblance of consistency here, I sort of actually understood that philosophy. I'm not saying I agreed with it. I just wasn't surprised that that was the approach that they were going to take, where they're going to move on from Gettleman, but for now they're going to try to maintain some consistency at the head coaching position and in their coaching staff and even at their quarterback position when we look at the other options potentially available to them this season. I will say that narrative for me has changed in the last 2 weeks. I didn't think a few weeks ago. In fact, I think it was a few weeks ago I was on air with Courtney Cronin, and I think one of our questions in one of our segments, is there anything Joe Judge can do here this last couple weeks of the season that's going to change your mind? And I said, no. I mean, I don't think the Giants' minds are going to be changed by anything that Joe Judge does. I think they've already made up their minds in terms of his retention, and they had certainly told us as much. And now I will say the last 2 weeks have been such a dumpster fire, and the noise is so loud. And you've referenced the former players that you're consistently getting texts from. Everyone's up in arms about the idea that they're going to keep Joe Judge. At this point, it feels like to me, Mara and the ownership need to clean house because the noise is so loud, and in part because of that play that you mentioned with the quarterback sneak. But just generally speaking, the coaching job here down the stretch of the season has been abysmal. It's, and they're a laughing stock because of it.
No doubt about it. And Amber, going back a couple of weeks in the Chicago Bears game, Joe Judge is a special teams coach. When your kickoff returner, Farrell Cooper, doesn't field the kickoff, thinking that it's going to go into the end zone and the ball settles at the two-yard line, which forces your team to take the ball inside the five and it ends up resulting in a safety and a net of 5 points before the half for the Bears, that is an absolute embarrassment. That's an indictment on the coaching staff. This is not a team that's well coached. You can look at the lack of execution and tell that. So for me, that's the part of it that's inescapable for Joe Judge. He has to be linked to the performances that we're seeing on the field, and it's not a product that the fan base can be proud of, which is something that he said at the introductory press conference a couple of years when he got the job. He said it would be a product that the fans can be proud of, and the Giants are a far cry from that. Joe Judge, in his first 2 years with the Giants, 10-23 record. Bill Parcells used to always say, you are what your record says you are, and quite frankly, it's just not good enough. You don't have an identity as a team. You don't know what the building block pieces for this team are moving forward. And so, Amber, I will say this. Joe Judge, he hasn't shown us enough to justify the Giants hanging on to him, especially with how bad it's looked over the course of the last month. The offense has been a disaster, even worse than before they fired Jason Garrett. The last three games, they haven't cracked 200 yards of total offense. Now, I get it. You don't have your starting quarterback, Daniel Jones. But even when Daniel Jones was the quarterback, this offense wasn't tearing it up. Daniel Jones had 10 passing touchdowns to 10 total turnovers. It's just not good enough. It's not working. But Joe Judge swears to us in the post-game press conferences that the culture is changing. I don't think we have any evidence that can actually prove that it is. And so for me, it's not about the perception in NFL circles when it comes to whether or not you want to be a revolving door for head coaches, hiring and firing head coaches every 2 years. And Joe Judge would have been the third consecutive coach that they've done that with. To me, it's about getting somebody in there that you feel like can do the job. And right now, Giants fans and former Giants players have serious doubts about Joe Judge. Coming up next, what would this title mean to Saban's legacy and dynasty at Alabama? We'll have the answer for that. But first, a word from Man in the Arena. Join host Gautam Chopra as he explores what Tom Brady has meant to football and the world in Man in the Arena, a new podcast from ESPN Plus and Religion of Sports. A companion piece to Gotham's ESPN Plus docuseries, this 10-part podcast examines the improbable ripple effects of Brady's career, things that have forced us to rethink everything we thought we knew about time, hatred, perfection, even fate. The podcast is brought to you by State Farm, ZipRecruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and stream the docuseries on ESPN+. Chris Canty and Amber Wilson, Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio, back after this.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty and Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Jumpstart the new year with Body Armor Light, the low-calorie sports drink hydrating your active lifestyle. Shop now at retailers nationwide. And Amber, we're taking it right up to College Football Playoff National Championship coverage, which starts at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio. And this is a huge matchup. This is the rematch from the SEC Championship game with Georgia and Alabama. And I would say for the better part of the college football season, everybody in college football circles felt like Georgia was by far and away the best team in all the land. And then Alabama pulls off the upset in the SEC Championship game. And now coming into the national championship game, Alabama once again is considered the underdog in this game against the Bulldogs. And so I got to ask you, what's going to be the biggest factor to Georgia being able to overcome the hurdle that is Nick Saban and beat the Crimson Tide?
Well, I don't want to say that Alabama had more to play for in the SEC championship and make it sound like Georgia doesn't care about winning an SEC championship, because of course they do, but their backs weren't against the wall. They knew they were in either way. Alabama, it was a do or die type situation, so they were extraordinarily motivated. Now tonight, obviously both teams are going to have that sort of motivation, and I think Georgia is coming off of a loss that they felt really embarrassed them, because the way that Alabama beat them, they beat them in ways that were completely out of character for Georgia. I mean, with Georgia, like, you're talking about the best pass rush in the entire country for the entire season, and then all of a sudden they can't get to Bryce Young at all in that SEC championship game, and they don't record a single sack. That's got to change tonight. Like, that's where you start, is getting pressure on Bryce Young. So I think really that's going to be the key for Georgia. They're going to get a little help, obviously, with John Metchie out for Alabama. So now they can really just key in on Jameson Williams and try to shut him down. But I think getting pressure on Bryce Young is going to be step number one for Georgia to have success.
That's the game plan defensively for Georgia, but offensively for the Bulldogs, I think they're going to have to get more from Stetson Bennett. I think he's one of the guys that you have to look at and say he has to have a big-time performance. We saw in the CFP semis what he was able to do against Michigan and targeting Brock Bowers, but also James Cook, their running back in the passing game. He came up huge. I think Stetson Bennett is going to have a productive outing, because let's face it, Alabama under Nick Saban, they're not going to let you run the ball downhill early and often. That's not going to happen. They're going to stop the run, or they're going to focus on being able to slow down the run game, and they'll commit as many defenders to the line of scrimmage as they have to in order to do that. And so it's going to be up to Stetson Bennett to make some plays in the passing game. Here's head coach from Georgia, Kirby Smart, on what he needs to see from his quarterback tonight.
Composure, decision-making. You know, there's certain plays he's going to make with his feet, and then there's some plays he's going to have to make a decision to throw it away. And that's what he didn't do last game, and we need him to do that this game.
Exactly, Amber. And it's one of those things that goes without saying, but I feel like we've got to mention it all the time. When it comes to big-time games, taking care of the football has got to be a key. And we know that this Alabama defense, with the pressure players that they have up front, led by Will Anderson Jr., they are going to put Stetson Bennett under the rest. It's imperative that he takes care of the football tonight.
Bennett was fantastic against Michigan. So it feels like he had a bit of a bounce back here. And he actually had a better quarterback rating than Bryce Young. He's not the better quarterback in this competition. Obviously, we know the Heisman winner is that. But the Stetson Bennett story is the best story in this competition coming out of these two teams. When he was pressed by Bama, he was under pressure. He obviously made the mistakes that he made. I do think he'll be more prepared for that this time around. It did feel like the lights were really bright on Stetson Bennett in the SEC championship, but he wasn't overwhelmed by the moment against Michigan. I think that's a confidence builder for Bennett. I think he'll come into this game more prepared. I don't know, Chris, I know you're really high on Bama, and I know you feel like Bama's going to get it done and it's going to be a repeat of what we saw in the SEC championship. And if I'm a betting woman, I'm not ever betting against Nick Saban. There's a few guys you don't ever bet against: Nick Saban, Tom Brady, you know, maybe a Bill Belichick, definitely LeBron James. And Nick Saban's at the top of the list, because if you don't want to ever bet against, you know, obviously a coach with that record and the coach that you know is the better coach. I mean, even though Kirby's done a great job with that Georgia program and he's the Saban disciple, you know that the better coach in this competition is Alabama, and you know the better quarterback in this competition is Alabama's quarterback. Normally, that's a winning success in college football. But here's my problem with rocking with Bama in the same way that I know you are. I just feel like I've seen the body of work from Georgia, and it's a lot bigger than the body of work from Bama in terms of the success. Yes, the SEC championship was unbelievably disappointing from the Georgia perspective, but Bama has been disappointing it numerous times throughout the season. I mean, they struggled against Florida. They struggled against LSU, Arkansas. I mean, they needed a miracle to get by Auburn. They lost to Texas A&M. Like, this is not the Bama team, if we take an entire season of work here, that we're used to seeing in years past. So I feel like if I'm looking at who is going to have the edge, I understand why Georgia's favored, because I do think, taking into account the entire season of work, the SEC championship, Georgia's performance there feels like an anomaly. All of that said, I'm not putting any money against Nick Saban.
Amber, all of the concerns that you raised about the Alabama Crimson Tide, you better believe that the last week in preparation, Nick Saban has been telling his team what the outside world is saying about them and how they feel about them going into this matchup as underdogs. Here's Nick Saban on what his team needs to do tonight to win the title.
Well, I think we have to control the line of scrimmage, you know, especially, you know, their front seven. Our offensive line's got to do a good job so we can, you know, have some balance and be able to operate a little bit. And I think we've got to do a good job of controlling their explosive plays, you know, in the back end. And always winning on the line of scrimmage is important in any game, but especially in games like this.
Yeah, Amber, I have no confidence that the Crimson Tide offensive line can win the line of scrimmage going up against that defensive front from Georgia with N'Kobe Dean and Jordan Davis and Devontae Wyatt and Jalen Carter. I just don't see that happening. So if Nick Saban wants a path to victory for his team and the offensive game plan that they're going to have to develop, it's going to have to feature Bryce Young dropping back early and often. I don't necessarily see another formula for them to have success on that side of the ball.
I do think it's going to come down to, like I said earlier, Bryce Young, getting to Bryce Young, the pressure there, because the ball is going to be in his hand. But in Georgia, you mentioned their offense. I mean, they converted just 3 of 12 third downs against Bama. Obviously, that has to change. Obviously, the moment can't be too big for Stetson Bennett. Both of these teams are going to have to play differently, because as well as Bama played in the SEC championship, Georgia's going to be ready for it now. And now they have the game plan. And now it's the real deal. And now Georgia's backs are against the wall as well. So it's going to look different tonight. I know the nation wasn't necessarily rooting for this matchup because we're tired of seeing it, and we did just see it, and obviously we're tired of seeing SEC powerhouses, and I think people are tired, very tired, of Bama winning national championships. That being said, I think it's clear that these are the two best teams in the country that we ended up with, and I do think we're going to get a very different game than we saw a month ago.
Who will win the trophy? Find out tonight. The College Football Playoff National Championship presented by AT&T. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern right here on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coming up next, the Manning Cast curse goes undefeated. You're listening to Chris Canty and Amber Wilson on Canty and Golic Jr. ESPN Radio. Back after this.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty here with Amber Wilson, who's filling in for Mike Golic Jr. All guests appeared via the Goodyear Hotline. We got to give a shout out to the guests that came on the show today. ESPN Miami Dolphins reporter Marcel Luis Jacques giving us the latest on Brian Flores firing and where the organization goes from here. ESPN sports betting analyst Tyler Fulgham to try to get your pockets right ahead of the College Football Playoff National Championship game. ESPN New York Giants reporter Jordan Renan giving us the latest on the Giants GM search and the decision to retain Joe Judge. And then we had co-host of the Freddie and Fitzsimmons show and ESPN college football sideline reporter Ian Fitzsimmons on to set the scene for the national championship game. And of course, our very own Mike Golic Jr. to jump in and give his thoughts on the same game. And then ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes giving us the news and notes from week 18 in the National Football League. If you missed any of it, go to the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast, download, rate, and subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. But Amber, we have now reached the portion of our show where it's time for us to go three and out.
Sometimes it's the worst. Sometimes it's the best. Either way, we'll get you straight with everything you need to know. This is three and out.
Three and Out is brought to you by Fidelity Investments. And Amber, there's really only one place to start with Three and Out, and that would be Klay Thompson's return to play yesterday for the Golden State Warriors. Klay dropped 17 points in his first game since 2019. You know, he had the knee injury and the Achilles injury in back-to-back years. Thompson, who hadn't played since Game 6 of the NBA Finals, logged 20 minutes in a 96-82 win over the Cleveland Cavs. He finished 7 of 18 from the field, including going 3 of 8 from behind the arc. He also reached some career milestones, notching his 12,000th career point and his 1,800th three-pointer. So pretty impressive from Klay Thompson in his debut after being on the sidelines with injury the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'd say really impressive. I mean, since we haven't seen him play basketball since 2019, we know he suffered the other injury in 2020. It was 31 months a 31-month layoff. I mean, to come back out there and be at all effective. Now, he missed some of those shots early on that he would normally make, but then he got hot and he hit, you know, obviously the threes, and he started to look like Klay out there, and he had the dunk. I think that this is a huge deal when we're talking about a player who had such a long layoff that I honestly had no idea what to expect from him entering the game.
Does this make the Golden State Warriors the clear favorites to win the NBA title this year?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think that they could be considered the clear favorites because of how well they've been playing. I just don't know. I know everyone's really high on Klay now and saying this team's super dangerous. I'm going to need more than just his debut to really evaluate that. And I think that, you know, the concern with him obviously is going to be durability and what that looks like moving forward as well. So I'm not quite ready to evaluate it based on Klay alone. Everything else they've done this season, though, is unbelievably impressive. And then if he can contribute and be this effective moving forward or even more effective, then obviously it's a scary team, but they were already a scary team, Chris.
No doubt about it, but Klay Thompson adding him to that backcourt shooting tandem with Steph Curry, I think that makes them a more dangerous team than what we've already seen. And I get it, the body of work so far so good, but Klay Thompson, in my opinion, takes it to another level. I can't wait to see Klay get settled in with the Golden State Warriors. But keeping it moving, Amber, I'm not sure that we're going to actually have a baseball season that starts on time, but needless to say, my Yankees are still making headlines in the middle of the winter. We have a report now that Rachel Balcovich is going to be the manager for the Yankees' low-A minor league affiliate. Balcovich, who joined the Yankees as a minor league hitting coach in November of 2019, will lead the Tampa Tarpons, a move that will make her the first female skipper in an affiliated professional baseball team, according to The Athletic. So your thoughts on the Yankees making Rachel Balcovich a manager of one of their minor league affiliates?
I mean, Rachel is a boss when you read about her accolades and everything she's done, a former softball catcher from Creighton in New Mexico. And then she was with the Cardinals and the Astros. And then she was hired as a Latin American strength and conditioning coordinator, where then she learned Spanish during her tenure there. She took some time off from baseball and went and got her master's at one point. And now here she is making history as the first female manager in affiliated professional baseball history. Unbelievable, very cool move for everybody involved. And hey, more of this from women who deserve it, and she certainly appears to.
Yeah, I'm a proud Yankees fan today. Diversity and inclusion in sports is something that we should all applaud and cheer for, and so I'm glad to see my New York Yankees making that decision to hire Rachel Balcovich. Keeping it moving, Amber, the Manning cast curse is undefeated this season. So seven active players joined Peyton and Eli Manning this season on the Monday Night Football Manning cast. All seven would go on to lose the very next week. So just to run down the list, we've got Travis Kelce and Russell Wilson, who joined the show in week one. The Chiefs and the Seahawks would go on to lose in week two. Rob Gronkowski joined the show in week two. The Bucks lost in week three. Matt Stafford joined in week three. The Rams lost in week four. The GOAT, Tom Brady, joined in week seven. The Bucks lost in week eight. Josh Allen joined in week eight. The Bills lost in week nine. And Aaron Rodgers joined in week 17. And, of course, the Detroit Lions took care of their business against the Packers in their regular season finale. So pretty interesting that the Manning cast curse seems to be going the way of the Madden curse. At least none of these guys are getting hurt. But it's right. Not a good thing to be going on the broadcast with Peyton and Eli Manning.
Yeah, still not a great curse because you don't want to lose, but certainly not as bad as we were seeing with some of the players that suffered from the alleged Madden curse. I will say that it's still worth it because that Manning cast is super fun for everybody to watch, and they need to continue to do it even if it costs a whole bunch of teams a whole bunch of losses.
Yeah, but just a word to active players, don't go on the Manning cast a week ahead of a big game. I'm just saying, putting that out there. Amber, before we get out of here, your prediction for the night, who you got?
I'm going with Georgia. I'm going with the whole body of work. I think they'll turn things around. I think we're going to see a different Georgia performance from the SEC championship.
Yeah, that's a different level of optimism. I'm going with Nick Saban. I can't bet against the best coach and the best quarterback. Coming up, the College Football Playoff National Championship presented by AT&T.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.